Some striking data on striking in America. I'm David Brancaccio in New York. First, the line about the mark of intelligence is the ability to hold two opposing ideas in your head at the same time. According to F. Scott Fitzgerald's principle, we may need some smarts to understand the economy here in late February 2023. Is it good? Is it bad? Well, it's both. Diane Swonk is the chief economist at KPMG.
We had this massive deceleration in consumer spending at the end of 2022, and now it looks like consumers are back, you know, revenge traveling like crazy and also spending like crazy. Part of it is it's just really hard to capture an economy that's moving this quickly with the old norms of seasonal adjustment. We had an unseasonably warm winter. Another part of it is sort of a tale of two economies we see going on. Those are companies that were the biggest winners of initial reopening hired up, and now we're seeing some layoffs announcements. Those announcements are small relative to, you know, how much they hired, but still painful for those who have to experience them.
The competition for workers in the hot labor market has given employees more clout to make demands as a group. Using data from the U.S. Bureau of Labor Statistics, we can tell you that last year, more than 120,000 workers took part in 23 major work stoppages. Major is defined as strikes or lockouts that involve at least 1,000 people. Here's Marketplace's Mitchell Hartman.
Cornell University looked at last year's labor actions and found strikes and lockouts rose 50%. Most were in education, healthcare, and food service. Cornell School of Industrial and Labor Relations Dean Alex Colvin says the tight labor market is emboldening workers.
They have some more bargaining power. The labor market's strong. They feel they can use the strike weapon to get gains they think they deserve.
Some workers are striking to improve the services they provide, says Jennifer Shearer at the Economic Policy Institute. When K-12 teachers in Columbus, Ohio went on strike,
one of their demands was that the district invest equally across the school system, upgrading facilities that were really affecting students' learning conditions.
Elsewhere, graduate teaching assistants are pressing for fewer students to supervise and nurses fewer patients to care for on each shift. I'm Mitchell Hartman for Marketplace.
Should getting paid a lot mean you can't get overtime pay? The U.S. Supreme Court issued a 6-3 ruling yesterday that says that in some circumstances, highly paid people are due extra pay for overtime. This is about an oil rig worker making $200,000 a year. Thing is, he was paid by the day. It's clear things would have been different if he was paid weekly or monthly. Justice Elena Kagan wrote that many other people making less than this oil worker, including nurses, would have lost overtime pay if this had gone the other way. Picture this, 40 or so business school students shepherded into buses for a 4-hour trip up into the deep woods of the upper Midwest. Away from campus, there's still a guided curriculum with readings and time for reflection. Does this sound like business school? It's part of an effort to increase the chances that the resulting MBAs aren't only in it for the money and also find purpose in their work, management as a calling. In other words, is driven by Andrew Hoffman, a professor at the University of Michigan's Ross School of Business and School for the Environment and Sustainability. Welcome, Mr. Hoffman.
Thank you for having me.
Dr. Hoffman, what are you doing with all these business school students out in the woodsy wilds of northern Michigan? Shouldn't you be teaching them about the wilds of the executive boardrooms?
Well, I'm teaching them about how to bring their whole self to business. I take away their cell phone and their computers, bring them out in the woods, and we walk through exercises and help them discern their vocation in management to both lead successful organizations and make society better.
What do you find? That sometimes students bring with them kind of a narrow point of view and you'd like to broaden that view?
Well, you know, I think that the students today are different. In the mid-90s, when I saw students who wanted to change the world, they went into schools of government and nonprofit management. And more students today are coming to school of business because they recognize that to solve the great challenges of our world, the solutions must come from business. And so they're trying to figure out how to adapt their career to do that kind of work. And in my opinion, business schools aren't keeping up.
I'm going to ask something probably a little bit too bluntly, but I have had business professors at big name schools complain to me that too many of their students are ruthless jerks. Is it that you're recruiting people who already have a wider sense of their place in the world, or are you taking people who maybe were thinking too narrowly about business and introducing them to the wider vistas?
I think it's a mixture of both. The kind of students that I see, not the majority, not all of them, there are still some that are just here to make money, but a growing number of them are coming in and saying, wait a minute, we want to address climate change. We want to think about income inequality. We want to think about the institutions of the market and whether they're really going in the right direction.
You think some of this thinking that you're seeing in your students might have been provoked by what we've been through with pandemic, or it's just something that's been happening in recent decades?
That's a very good question. And I have to confess, I don't know if I know the answer. I see in these students, I wouldn't say a depression, but a concern over the kind of world that they've been left. And so whether the pandemic accentuated that, quite possibly. I think one thing that the pandemic has done for them is that it's given them a sense that the world is not certain. Literally, with the pandemic, the world changed overnight. And that's a different conception of reality that may imprint them just like our grandparents were imprinted by the Depression.
Andrew Hoffman's a professor at the University of Michigan's Ross School of Business and the School for Environment and Sustainability. Thank you very much.
Thank you, David.
He's also an open source guy who makes his curriculum available free if you want to use it or teach with it. Marketplace.org has a link to his page. In New York, I'm David Brancaccio. It's the Marketplace Morning Report. From APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.